Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gabaza, and for today, we get into a conversation about what's happening in the township economy. Many things have been said about the informal economy in South Africa and just how big it is. But for today, we're just going to be getting a little bit more practical about some of the opportunities that lie in that space, what people are doing to take advantage of these opportunities, and where some of the possible gaps are, and some of the efforts that are being made to actually make sure that that is a space that is both highlighted and people are educated about. To bring light to it, we are joined by Bulelani Balabala, who is the founder of the Township Entrepreneurs Alliance, and we're just going to be getting a sense of what's going on in that space. Bulelani, greetings to you today.
No man, greetings. Thank you so much for having me on the platform today, actually.
All right. So, for me, I'm just going to say this. I don't think Bulelani remembers this. But we've actually encountered each other. We're talking earlier on about some of the spaces that we've encountered each other in. And he probably doesn't remember this, but when I first started out at the Financial Mail, about 6 years ago now, roughly, I'm going to call it late 2018 into 2019, I did one of the first long feature articles I ever wrote for the Financial Mail was around what's called business development support in South Africa. So your accelerators and all of these venture builders and, you know, that type of thing. And Bulelani was actually one of the voices that I used in that article. So he's always been one of those people that I see every periodically, and I'm like, you know, that was one of the first people who contributed to an article that, you know, I wrote back in the day. So it's very good to have you here, brother.
No, thank you so much, man. Wow. You know, strange enough, I remember that article years ago, because I actually remember that. Eh? What a small world. Eh?
Yeah, it's definitely a small
world. You see, this then goes back to I think it's what I always tell, especially also business owners as well, that it's important that your yeses be yeses and your noes be noes.
Yeah.
Don't take on any work where you know that you can't deliver. And then if you take on the work and you can't deliver, communicate effectively with the client. Why? Because it's a small world.
Yeah.
Sometimes we avoid delivering certain things, or we ignorantly walk away and say, there's no need for me to deliver, but you meet those people in the other end. Why? Because human beings are not trees. They're consistently moving and evolving, you know? So you might think that you left someone at position B, and then you run into them at position Q, and they're the ones who are now calling the shots in that particular position. So thank you so much for that reminder, man.
Yeah, no, definitely. Relationships are important. And like you said, they're probably the currency. They're probably the real currency of business.
No, true. I mean, I was talking to, I think, CEOs of one of the multinationals. And what he was saying is that he went with some of his executives and they went to INSEAD, the institution. But they were there for 3 weeks doing an executive business management course.
Nice.
And he says that the most interesting thing that happened there was the 3 weeks. So of the 3 weeks, they spent a full week focusing on networks and networking.
Yeah.
And then interesting enough, they were asking, but the 2 weeks we're trying to cram, you guys try to force feed us information on different things. Now we're spending a full week doing practical stuff, talking about networking, talking about the power of having social equity. Why?
Yeah.
And I think it was such an interesting one where I think the facilitator was talking about everything we taught you in the past 2 weeks doesn't work if this doesn't work.
Yes.
This is what makes everything move. You know, the having networks, you know, most importantly, not just knowing people, but ensuring that the right people also know you. And also not just that they know you, but they know you for the right type of things.
Yeah.
So I think then being deliberate in that particular sense means that how you even show up, you need to be very calculative and very clear in terms of how you show up into the marketplace, you know. So which is why I think when you sort of touch on the fact that relationships are important, for me, sort of look at, you know, when an entrepreneur, especially a small business that we work with, talks about, I'm not accessing opportunities. I tried calling them or email. Have you gone there? Because sometimes, you know, we've relegated building relationships to online relationships. So if I've gone to my LinkedIn profile and I've commented on some of your posts and sent you a LinkedIn DM and we chat on LinkedIn DMs, we think that's business. That's not business. It's a start of business. But the real business for me is really in the relationship. And I think I've seen it in my personal entrepreneurial journey where, I mean, I've been in business for 20 years this year, right? 20 years, 16th of August. Of those 20 years, 18 years of formal business. Now, interestingly enough, I remember years ago having a client say, you know, we had someone come and pitch to us who had a better solution. It was also cheaper. Now we still want to continue working with you because we love the relationship that we have with you. So we'll share someone, we can't share their proposal with that with you, you know, for privacy, but we'll share some thoughts around what they were pitching and where we think you can improve. And if you can improve in 6 months, we'd like that because we want to continue the journey with you. And I think that's the real disruptor in and around the relationship, because what the relationship means to that person is that now I'm secure. I can trust this individual. I don't need to start from scratch. And if this individual is willing to learn, then we can go the whole entire journey and build from there.
No, it's a very important discussion. And maybe that's a good jumping off point as well for this conversation, because we often look at different aspects of the economy and their contribution. But in looking at a particular aspect of the economy, you also need to interrogate what is our relationship with that part of the economy, and what impressions do we have of that specific economy. Just the other week, we were chatting with the Drinks Federation of South Africa, and according to them, alcohol is a 200 plus billion rand, you know, sector just in South Africa, right? So keen to get a sense from you. What do you think is South Africa's relationship with the township economy, especially as someone who's made it their sort of life's work to bring light to that part of the economy?
Yeah, man. I mean, township economy, shining a spotlight on township entrepreneurship is something I'm very passionate about. I think because it emanates from the fact that I myself, an individual who started my entrepreneurial journey in the township, ran my longest business based in the township that service multinationals, right? And I think for me, you know, the real, when you sort of, and I think the relationship has sort of evolved over the years. You know, it's been one initially that was marked by, you know, international brands are better than locals, to one where now an individual is confident enough to wear a t-shirt written Tsepo, you know, that they would have bought money for, right? And they hard-earned money for. And I think for me, the really, you know, the big conversation around all of those things is really going to solemnly lie on the fact that we require government to be an enabling partner. Because when government is an enabling partner, then it becomes very, very easy for you to be able to draw other individuals, tourists into the township to support the township. Yeah. And I make a number of examples. There's big conversation around special economic zones that's been happening over the past number of years, special economic zones that are being built up. But you know, the big thing that I've always said is, but what of the ones that are already existing in there? Because you go to majority of the big townships, there are hubs and economic zones that have been there where there was industrialization, manufacturing of items. You know, I mean, I remember in one of the communities that I grew up in Tembisa, it's still there today, but dilapidated, where there were mechanics on the other end, there were engineers on the other end, actually making mechanical parts, manufacturing mechanical parts. There were guys who were manufacturing ice cream on the other end, dry cleaners that were servicing urban areas and urban dry cleaners, right, that were industrial. So the big thing for me is to say, with every dispensation where new leadership comes into power, you know, they want to start new things. But can we then pause for a little bit and not start anything new and not be driven by, I want to live my own legacy of something that I've arched out, and take a moment to then, you know, survey the land. What is already there? What is already in existence and what already works? At some point, if you remember years ago, there was a big drive as well from Gauteng Department, Gauteng Economic Development, to formalize business. And at some point, it then led up to the national or rather National Department of Small Business Development talking about formalizing. But the, you know, then the big piece of that puzzle that we miss is that the market is in actual fact very formal. What we need to be saying is that we as big business need to be formalizing ourselves, or rather educating ourselves in terms of how they operate and how they operate at the end of the day. So the big misconception there and around the relationship is that, oh my goodness, they need the help. In most cases, you find that individuals that are operating within this space have already found ways of operating without the help of mainstream banks or mainstream financial streams. Is that the most efficient way to grow your business? Obviously, it's not, because you are heavily capitalized. You know, you're utilizing whatever cash flow comes in to buy vehicles cash, to buy assets cash, and the sort. But equally so, what that's then done is that it's built resilient entrepreneurs. But could those entrepreneurs not turn into billion rand businesses? They definitely could, because if they were able to do that with the little resources that they have and grow that into hundreds of millions without getting any financial support from any funding institution, means that we've got this unearthed economic powerhouse that could be unleashed if only we operated from a place of understanding. And I think for me, a place of understanding says we never advocate for the complete removal of any compliance requirements, either from a DFI, a banking institution, or any other funding institution out there. But what we always say is that apply a sense of understanding. And what that simply means to us is simply this, and we've done this on a number of projects that we've worked on. If you are to truly, genuinely support entrepreneurs within a certain communities across the country, you need to understand a number of things. The fact that the pool of the ones who are really blacklisted is very high. The pool of the ones that are operating within a debt ratio, and as a result, their relationship with your, whether their trans or credit bureau rather, is not good, are extremely very high. That's in the majority. Ones who are operating in debt are in the majority, which then says that if the criteria is incumbent on you having good standing in all aspects of your business, then you won't be able to participate in any opportunities whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, but however, the biggest thing that we've always said to any stakeholders or corporates that we've worked with is, what is crucial? Definitely having CIPC registration is crucial. What else is crucial? Being registered to SARS is crucial, but is being compliant crucial? Yes, it's definitely crucial, but could we give provisional approval to the individual and understand why they are uncompliant or they are non-compliant? And if that reason makes sense, then we then give them provisional approval to them to go sort that out.
Mm.
Now, what that then does is that it changes the game entirely, because when we drove these entrepreneurs and told them to formalize, they went and they formalized, but on the other end, there was no market access. And the number one, there was no market access. Number two, the customer base that they were already servicing that gave them money didn't require any of the formal requirements. So then they became redundant. And at the end of the day, whenever they now want to participate in mainstream economies, those mainstream economies require them to have those documentation in place. So it's almost that confusing aspect when you sort of think about it. So the big thing that we've always said is to say, from a big corporate perspective, let's apply a sense of understanding when we want to actually support this particular segment of the market. Mm-hmm. Because that level of understanding will unlock a lot of amazing insights towards the growth of that relationship, but most importantly, immersing yourself deeply within how things are done. So when we now talk about green economy, when we have this conversation around green economy and the opportunities available in Sandton, you know, that must never translate down to saying, yeah, we now need to go to the township and teach them. But that's a misinformed view. We actually know what the green economy is because we've operated within the circular economy for many years. We've had little, so we've taken, you know, your margarine containers that we got from work, where our mothers went to work and then asked their bosses for the margarine containers. They brought them home. That was our SCAF team, you know, where clothes were moved from, not just from the one individual to the other, but three or four or five generations were sharing the same layer of clothing, right? How we take a sack of orange and turn that into a bathing instrument. The big thing that we then need to say is that we are aware of the fact that people have been doing this, but now let's now make them aware of how they can make money and how they can build sustainability for themselves in making money, utilizing the sources or utilizing the circular economy that they've been participating in for ages and memorial. That then changes how you operate, but also what it then does is that it means that the adoption for the individuals that you want to actually support becomes higher, because now you're operating from a place of trust.
Mm. Let's talk about something that you—that's the theme in what you were saying just now. That exclusion from what's considered the formal economy, the blacklisting, you know, that type of thing. What do you make of? We've covered them quite a bit on this platform, but there are a lot of institutions or businesses that call themselves alternative lenders, right? We see that there's a group of disenfranchised people, but we're willing to come in and score them on a different set of metrics than your typical bank would. That's one layer. Other people have gone into the market with, let's say, your fintech type of solutions, where you take a fintech solution into a small business in the township, and over time you're able to generate some type of a transaction history, you know, from that business, with the hope that that entrepreneur can then use that to go as a proof point to be like, you see, I'm doing well, there's trading here, there's demand for my goods, all I need is liquidity to be able to make it through, to smooth out my cash flow cycles between me getting stock and, you know, all of these things that, you know, normal businesses encounter. What do you make of, you know, all of those attempts, noble or, you know, perhaps predatory?
You know, completely noble. I think the nobility of anything is really driven by intent, because, you know, we see a lot of big things on billboards and adverts. They look amazing. They look noble on paper, but they're beneficiaries at the end of the day. But however, the idea in and itself is noble. I think I've encountered some of those fintechs, right? And I think for me, it's completely disruptive, but it's what has been done. I mean, you sort of, I'll take you back, years back, you know, Dr. Richard Maponya had, you know, one of the best dealerships in the township, but not just the township at the time. At a certain particular point in time, it sold more vehicles at the dealership than they sold anywhere else. In my conversation with one of the sales gentlemen who worked there, a gentleman I have the privilege of consistently engaging every quarter, he worked there as a sales agent and says that, no, we're very clear. And our clear mandate was, the people that we're selling cars to can't get financing because they don't meet the criteria. So what I then did, so this is what he's talking about, what I was advised and what we then started to do is that if someone came in to buy a car, we saw that they were making money because they were selling chickens on the side of the road, they were stocking up their tavern and the sort. So we then came up with a formula, a simple one. We worked with the FNIs to say, come in every single week. I will then bring your book. First thing that I need you to do, Mr. Whoever, you're coming in to buy the car, you're not going to get the car. But however, in 3 months, I'm going to guarantee that you're going to get the car. This is what I need you to do. Then they went on a journey. Write down everything that you're transacting. Start to deposit that money into your bank account. Bring this into my office once a week and I'll type it out into an Excel spreadsheet. Bring the bank's deposit slip so that it shows the proof of income. Da, da, da. So they went on a journey with these individuals who then later on ended up buying the vehicles. But more than buying the vehicles, it then became a source of help. So to anyone else who was in the community, man, how did you achieve this feat? Go to this individual. That's how you then grow your sales. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, for me, the big thing is to say, if we really are interested in the SME market, the township economy, driving the support and funding opportunities for them, those are some of the thinking that we then need to apply. I think as fintechs or disruptive model that says that we look at behavior, behavioral funding, as opposed to the traditional, we see the money going into the bank account, we see it coming out, we're going to go check your credit score, you're doing well. We're going to then balance out what is coming in versus what's coming out and then give you the finance. You know, as opposed to understanding the fact that I could make a million every single month, but be on a minus. You know, then, but I am a profitable business in the long run, just not in this particular month of the past 6 months, and I lose out on a simple 10,000 rand or 100,000 rand because the individuals on the other end don't understand. So I think applying that level of understanding for me is completely the right one. And I think, you know, it then becomes incumbent on the entrepreneur as well, because it's your fiduciary responsibility to ensure that whatever legal or financial applications you're making or going into, that you become very detailed in researching if they are noble or not.
One of the fintechs, to your earlier point, that I cover quite on a regular basis because they are listed on the JSE is Lesaka, previously known as NetOne. And, they, in terms of stated strategy, they go for the informal market. And they have a lot of these machines, with the merchants. Their service is Kazang. They have a lot of machines out there. So using all of that data, they came out with a number recently, which I found very interesting. They estimate that South Africa's informal market, driven in large part by what's happening in the township, is 600 billion rand every year, or roughly 6% of, the country's total GDP. Your take on that number?
I definitely think that's a good number. It's a conservative number.
I like that.
You know what? And also, I love what Lesaka is doing because, I've had a few interactions with them. But I love what they're doing and also really just sharing the spotlights and insights. Because I think what within the conversations we've had in traditional banks, or not necessarily all of them, because we've only had a conversation with one of them, it was many, many, many years ago. They were not interested in sharing any insights and data. And what we're saying at the end of the day is that how then do we then unlock opportunities if you're holding on to that data and not sharing some of that basic data with the market? But I think when I sort of look at that particular number, for me, it's an understated number. But it's a great number because that number is informed by the real matrix where individuals were utilizing card transactions. And my big thing is to say, if you've got over, as per the last measurement, right, if you've got over 1.8 million informal businesses, and there's way more than that, but those are the ones that were able to engage at the time of that particular report, how much more when you actually get the device in the hands of all these individuals? And I think there's now a bigger time now more than ever to digitize. Why? Because of the rise in crime. Because of number one, not just the rise in the basic crime where someone comes and robs you. Now there's an individual who's going to scout out your business and come to you and say, I need you to pay me 100 rand or 2,000 rand a month because I'll be your protector. I'll be your security guard. And I mean, there's a big amount of that whenever we go out into Cape Town and to do work, especially Khayelitsha, Gugulethu, Langa, whatsoever. That's the big cry from those entrepreneurs there. So there's a bigger need more than ever to really digitize the business. But in the digitization, it's not just taking a payment device and throwing it at an individual. It all needs to make sense. What is an individual trying to achieve? Is the battery life good? Is having a big screen, on this particular device an intelligent thing to do? Because these guys are on the move. Is it going to draw attention? Someone is going to think it's a cell phone and try and rob me. So all of those things are the nuances that you need to take into consideration when you're getting these devices. Because if you remember, there was one particular device was trying to solve for what they are trying to solve for that came into the township. I think it was One Cell or One Pal, something like that, years ago. But because the device at the time met the needs of the people got the charges. They were not interested with what they were being charged because they were going to charge a premium above whatever they were charging at the end of the day. Because they knew that there was a market. Why? Because it was a basic device that did the job, that didn't bring any attention. It was dull and boring. No criminal would come and steal. In actual fact, if they rob me, they'll take everything else and leave this device. And I'm the happiest with that because that means that I can continue to run my business without any distractions and the sort.
It is very interesting, to see all of the different market dynamics that are at play, because unless you've been in that space, right, you're not thinking about, the protection money and, that type of thing. And I guess some of the dynamics that operate there, and also what you said at the beginning where you said that's a conservative number. They break it down a little bit. I'm just going to read you some of their breakdown and you can tell me what you think. So according to the breakdown, so now we're breaking down the 600 billion. So spaza shops, they estimate 180 billion. Taverns, 110 billion. Spaza rentals, 25 billion. Salons, barbers, and hair care, 10 billion. And then catering companies, the guys that are selling quarters, all of that stuff, 90 billion. Backroom rentals, 20 billion. The one I found most entertaining was Muti Traders, 18 billion. Because I didn't know that that Muti was that big of a business, but you know, as you can see, so you know, those were some of the most interesting ones that I found. The one that they didn't put on the chart, but I have it on good authority, was Stockvels. They said that one is about 45 or so billion rand across the country that is being just floating around in there. You know, any comments on these ones?
I agree with the numbers. I agree with the number. I think I agree with the numbers as a sample pool for what could be actually out there in the market. I believe that's a fact because, you know, some time back, I mean, I think it is such a fact. You know, it's what we spoke about before we got in.
Yeah.
It's a project we worked on. And I think I was being interviewed and I was sharing a story of one entrepreneur who was making 580,000 rand a month, you know, selling quotas. You know, to the ordinary people, person, I felt at the time that was an insult. And they hurled all sorts of insults. I trended on Twitter for a number of days and people couldn't believe that. They thought they were selling drugs. But those are the numbers. Mm. And the numbers are the numbers. Well, it's unfathomable to say the person doesn't have branding, doesn't have a logo, doesn't have an HR department. He's operating out of a zinc container in the township and he's making those numbers. It doesn't even make sense because how is he making 38% net profit operating out of a zinc container in the township? Whereas I'm operating my business in an urban area, I'm paying rent, I've got contracts, I've got leases, I've got all these things, and I'm not even making as much as that. But the big thing for me is there is a lot of money in the township. And I think without any data or any insights or anything, just look at where all the big business are focused on. You know, because there is no, because when you sort of unpack, there is no more money that you're going to extrapolate from mainstream markets or those consumers, because those consumers are probably set in their ways. They've tested out various brands and they're now set in, my economic position at this moment is here and this is the brand that I'll utilize. So the next frontier is really for them, the township economy, and being able to extract and participate within that market. So I think based off the ratio of what's being said, they are definitely agree with that as a dipstick for the fact that there's actually more opportunity available within that market.
You know what's interesting about all of these conversations is that it feels like, and I think this harkens back to our earlier discussion about the relationship, you know, with the township economy. It feels like all these years later, despite the many proof points, there is still an underestimation of just how formidable that part of the economy, you know, actually is. And also attempts, you know, given the story that you just spoke about now, where someone is making a lot of money, legitimate money, from something that perhaps people would ordinarily look at and think, oh, there's not much going on there. But actually, there's a lot going on there. So I don't know. I feel like it's a, can I call it like a battle of narratives in a little bit, right?
It is. I think it's definitely a battle of narratives. Because what those battle of narratives ends up doing is that it builds up a mindset of divide and conquer. Because at the end of the day, after I've questioned them like that in a negative sense, I'm going to take the money and go give it to a multinational as opposed to giving it to this individual directly, right? Because in most cases, because of the fact that majority of the ingredients and products that you use come from a big business or a large corporate one way or another, you know, but the big thing for me is I've always said that let's be deliberate about where we direct that money, because when that individual backs up and it bulks up and is able to build the revenue, he'll be able to get the equipment, get the space, and start to, you know, eat up certain layers of the value chain, as opposed to outsourcing and getting service providers to then deliver on that. But also the big thing for me is what we started with, which is the relationship. So another part of that, sometimes that then where even large corporates see the numbers, but then they look across the board and say, but big retailer X, Y, and Z went into the township. They're no longer there. We think that those numbers are not true. No, but they went there and did what? You know, they went into the township, rebranded shops that were wholesalers in the townships and called them their name brand whatsoever. And what did they force the guys to do? To use their system and to stockpile their products. So you've got someone selling dog food in the township. And then, you know, you've got the owners complaining, saying that, you know, I was running a very successful business and I thought that the merger with this big retailer would actually bring more credibility and give us more buying power within the market. But then we signed up, then we got in there, and then we got more frustrated. Now those individuals are worse off than they were, you know, way worse off than even before they started the business. And I think that's the big thing. So number one, when going into that market, really for me, you know, don't just build a relationship, but hone in on that relationship with that individual to guide you every single step of the way. Because the moment you operate like that, then you are able to, you know, deliver. Because the very nature of people that live in the township, I grew up in the township, majority of us grew up in the township, it's not extractive. You know, there was nothing in us, in our neighbors, in our community that we saw where people were hoarding. Because if a neighbor had, they gave. You know, if my neighbor had a birthday party, I was invited, even if I'm not a 10-year-old, like the 10-year-old that they had. And that then goes to show that at the end of the day, deep down, we're an individual that is primarily driven by community, that is driven by relationships, that is driven by trust. Every brand needs to solve for these three things when you're going into the township. Are you building a relationship? Is that relationship based off understanding? Will that relationship, you know, grow into a community of individuals that believe in what you're trying to build? Will there be trust? Because if there is none of these things, you can throw whatever you want at us, we still won't take it. Because that's where our sense of pride comes from. That is why you can have me at my poorest still saying, no, I could never do that. Why? Because my values won't align.
Yeah.
So we still have our values above this greed mindset that is being perpetuated, as being said, you find it in the township, whatever the case is.
One of the, I'm going to get, for risk of getting cancelled a little bit, but I'm just going to bring it up. There tends to be, what you call this, narratives about different communities not getting along business-wise in the township economy. So whether you're talking about, let's say, your large corporates, not understanding, how those market dynamics, in certain aspects, I also feel like people also, try to drive a narrative around, foreign nationals. There's also, the crime aspect that you mentioned earlier on, where some are like, I could never operate there. It's too dangerous. All of this stuff. Is there any work being done to dispel some of those things or to improve some of those dynamics?
No. I'm pausing a bit to really think. No, to my knowledge.
Okay. Cool.
Because I guess maybe yes, there is, because the work that we do primarily is to dispel that, is to create a culture of collaboration, a culture that says, I'm not just gonna, turn a blind eye when I see my fellow entrepreneur being robbed or, being taken to the gutters for whatever the case or reasoning is. But is there an environment that is enabled, that is created for the individual or even businesses to be protected from crime and the sort? No. I mean, I'll relay a story now. One of the entrepreneurs that we work with was arrested because he was called where the guy jumped over his neighbor's fence, a business neighbor's fence, stole some stuff, jumped into his fence, stole some stuff. The onlookers knew him. They called the guy next door. He got there. He found the guys next door beating up the thief because they caught him. The other two assailants ran off. Then he got there as well. They decided to take this guy to the police station so that he gets arrested. The police arrested all three business owners. It's a very weird story because they're saying, no, because you brought him here, that means that you also were involved in the beating. But he says, what are you talking about? Because I'm bringing a criminal who's stolen stuff. You know, why am I now being arrested? So which then says that if that is actually how the justice system operates, then the businesses are sitting ducks. Because then the criminals will continue to do whatever they want at the end of the day. Why? Because you can't touch me. The law says you can't shoot me. And am I rid of other things? The law says that even if you see me stealing in your business and, you know, you need to first assess if your life is at risk before you shoot. Even though you see that I've got a gun, you must shoot in the air. So there's a number of things that we really need to really look into. And I think there's never been a time more than now where you need, and I never thought a time like this would come, where you need SAPS as a stakeholder in your enterprise supply development conversation and your incubation conversation, you know, and not just community policing, but as well as bringing businesses into the fold and bringing SAPS into the conversation so that they really understand how to truly support these individuals at the end of the day. But also, how do we then equip them as a community of business owners so that as a community, they can also then protect themselves within the guides of the law? Because we also then see that, you know, when you sort of look at the numbers in and around how many active police officers are they, you know, versus the crime that we experience on a day-to-day basis, those numbers don't measure out. But if we build pockets of communities driven by the SABS and supported of business owners that will form a community that will protect each other, that becomes easier. Now we are able to help them in ensuring that their work gets done.
Sure. No, that sounds like a, a harrowing type of environment to be operating in. And I guess it speaks to what you said earlier on about the type of resilience that entrepreneurs in that space have sort of learned, gained, or had to build, you know, over time. Now, before we let you go, I want to switch over and just attack two things. The first one is from a Township Entrepreneurs Alliance point of view. You've been touching a little bit, you know, about the fact that you guys are working with a number of entrepreneurs, etc. But if I am, you know, with your enterprises, and maybe I get into the business of selling Vaseline, right? And, you know, I'm seeing that there's a specific flavor of Vaseline that I think is going to do well. And I've got my guys that are selling them one by one at all the, what you call this, all the traffic stops in Alex or something like that. And I'm making a lot of money. But I'm now thinking about how do I expand? How do I, you know, grow, whatever. I come to Township Entrepreneurs Alliance. What's the engagement you are having with me or I'm having with you? And what are the type of conversations and issues that I'm bringing up? What type of things are you helping me with?
Yeah, so I love that, right? Because the very thing that we've been able to do, or rather do over the past in March 2025, right, is we, number one, we solve for by offering the entrepreneurs business development training, right, which is soft learning, but on theme topics that are relevant to where your business is struggling in right now. Because we believe in a simple thing. Give me information that is practical that I can apply after I've learned it. Then that way it becomes measurable and it's easier for and palatable for the business owner to apply.
Yeah.
The second thing that we do, especially for our structured program, is pairing that individual business owner with a mentor or even a group of mentors, depending on what program we are running at the end of the day, or what program will also then get funded by whatever funding partners that we then bring in. So for instance, the standard programming that we run is free and open to all entrepreneurs. You know, we've got something that we call the GASI Business Workshop and Expo, which then does a myriad of different things, but it's learning. It's showcasing local business while setting, and also then setting aside procurement. while giving a certain pool of them 50,000 rand towards the growth of their business, but those ones then form part of an accelerator. So I think what we've then been able to do is to build a funnel system to say we don't have the financial capabilities to do the deep learning for all of them. But however, what we'll then do is that we will then offer all the strategic learning at a mass level to all the individuals and then filter it to the next tier, which says that if you've got a product, we'll help you in this way, in which then narrows further down. If you're a small business that participates in a certain program, then it's going to further narrow down. And I think then our big thing with that was to then say, well, number one, we'll expose you to a community of other business owners with the idea that you guys will collaborate. Now, we've been able to then measure out that 68% of the entrepreneurs that participate in our programs do business with each other. And the big thing then for us is that was the win. Because in the backdrop of the fact that we can't give you the money for the machines and all we could provide is a space for you to learn a particular thing and you made people to do business with, we've actually done a part of the job that is within our financial capabilities and put you in a position where now you can get more money through the network that you've then been able to build. And I think that for me is one of the main things. However, you know, as we develop and grow and are launching our platform next year, you know, we're looking to really onboard the over 80,000 township entrepreneurs that we've worked with, invite more, and for a number of things, you know, learning on the platform, networking on the platform, opportunities that are on the platform, accessing rewards with all the big players or large corporates that have got products that are aimed at small businesses within this market at a discounted rate, but also then equally ensuring that you're also then utilizing the platform as a basic CRM to manage your sales, your team, your workflows.
Nice. Especially the CRM part, because I think that's one of the things, putting in systems for any business is difficult. And I can imagine when you're a single entrepreneur and you are everything, sales, marketing, HR, you're the accountant, it's a real one. I also understand you guys do a lot of events as well, and workshops, that type of thing. My quick follow-up on that one would be, how do you ensure that those types of engagements are useful and don't just become a talk shop?
So for me, it's in a number of things. So for instance, I'll give you an idea. So next month we've got our summit, it's the Township Economy Summit. But we're pairing it up with an awards component. So it's a Township Economy Awards and Summit. So it's a 2-day summit on the 21st and 22nd of November. On the 23rd, we're hosting the awards. Now, the summit theme is inclusive economic future, right? Because there is no future if it's not inclusive. Because what happened 3 years ago with the July riots will happen at a massified scale, you know, because when a community of individuals are hungry enough, there is no secure estate that is secure enough that will stop people from jumping over that fence or even just walking in. Yeah. So I think it's being mindful of that. And the second part for us is to say, if we're talking about an inclusive economic future, what does that look like? That looks like unpacking the 6 main industries that are active in the township. And the 6 main industries that we're looking to unpack is, number one, the green economy, focusing primarily on the circular economy and the opportunities that are available there, as well as waste management. Yeah. The second one for us is to unpack, you know, construction and housing in the township, back rooms, and the building maintenance thing opportunities that are available. The third thing one for us is retail and wholesale, which is actually the one of the very big industries in the township. You know, your spaza shops, as well as your shisanyamas and the sort, fall under here. You know, the third one that we really, really deeply also then want to make sure that we unpack is logistics, which covers your taxis and any movement that your last mile delivery that happens within the township. And I think the big thing that we want to unpack there is to say, we already do the learning throughout the year. The learning is there that one can always go back and reference. But the big thing that we want to unpack here is to say, on the day, we want to walk away, we want individuals to walk away with one of three things. Yeah. Number one, information that is relevant to your business that you can apply immediately. Yeah. Number two, opportunities that you heard, that you noted, that you can plug into immediately. Mm-hmm. The third, any market access opportunities that you can immediately plug into. Those are the three main things. So we are not looking at long speeches around telling us about, you know, the economy of the taxi industry. No, we're not interested in that. So give me simple things, A plus B plus Z. If I want to get a taxi, where do I go? Where is the best place for me to get it funded? So should I get it funded, you know, which taxi association would be the most lenient on me in getting a license? That for me is practical conversations, because we have taken the large scale conversations that happen in various parts of the market, and we have then adopted them to conversations with entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So if we are economists and we're having that conversation, it makes sense, because now we are future proofing, you know, the work that we are in. But if you're talking a small business owner, I need to be practical. I need to be able to hear it and quickly eject myself from that particular part and then pull out the things that are practical for now.
Yeah.
And the things that aren't practical for now, because in any conversation, in any learning, not every single piece of information that you learn is going to be information for now. But our big measurement is to say at least 40% of that must be information for immediately now. 60% is stuff that I can implement in 2 or 3 or 4 years. So that's one of the big things that we are looking to drive for. The summit is free to attend. It's about 1,200 capacity. We are already on 880. So if you want to join us at the summit, it's free. You just register at townshipeconomyawards.co.za.
And it's got to be interesting to see, what the attendance for something like that is. Engaging with a number of small business owners, you do get a sense that there is a hunger for that very practical type of knowledge, not the theory of, you know, how does a market or an industry work, but rather, how do I get from A to B to C, and how does that directly affect my business? Last point for us, South Africa has more than 500 townships.
Yeah.
They are big ones that we always hear about. You mentioned a couple of them earlier on, Guguletu, Khayelitsha. We've mentioned Tembisa already. There's obviously Alexandra, there's Soweto, Umlazi, all of these big ones that we know and hear about. From your experience, this doesn't need to be a data point. It can be anecdotal based on, you know, the way you've been, who you've interacted with. A township that is just firing money-wise, where you're just seeing activity, you know, which one would you point at?
Sure. It's quite a few.
Fine. It doesn't have to be one.
Yeah, no. So, quite interestingly enough, when you talk about, maybe let me answer two ways, right? When you talk about entrepreneurial hunger, where the entrepreneurs are very hungry, driven, innovative, showing up, delivering, your Venda, your Limpopo, your Northwest, your Mpumalanga, and as well as your Free State entrepreneurs. They come out in masses and they're doing big things. They never, for me, the attitude that I picked up from them is they've never gotten to a point where they feel like they've arrived. A person is sitting there, they're making 5 billion rand a year, and they're still thinking, how can I do better? But then when you come to Soweto, there's already we've been overexposed. When you come to Tembisa, we've been overinformed. We've been overexposed. We know all of these things already. You know, and I think it's that, what's this word, man? It's that mindset, entitlement mindset to opportunities. Even when you don't even have them, you still feel entitled to saying, but we already know these things, right? But obviously from a monetary perspective, man, sure. I mean, it's definitely the big ones. I mean, Umlazi, she has a lot of activity happening there.
With the fintechs I was mentioning earlier on, I once took a trip to Umlazi and they were just showing us some of the systems that they have in place, etc. And I will never forget, I always tell the story, normal spaza shops that we see, especially the ones that are housed in a container,
yes,
right? The red containers. We're going around, we're looking at different spazas, looking what products are moving, not moving. This one lady had a normal spaza, nothing out of the ordinary. It looks like any other, right? And this lady is telling you that she's doing 350K a month just from that spaza. It was eye-opening. You hear theoretically these numbers that I've been quoting, you know, throughout the conversation. You hear them and they sound big and they sound good. But it's only when you're standing in front of a spaza shop And this person, you're looking at their goods, you're looking at the drinks and the chips and the bread and the water. And then this person is telling you that they're doing 350K. And this was about 4 years ago. So it means she's probably even grown beyond that. And probably she's probably wasn't even the one was doing the most, in that part of Mlazi. I was like, okay.
And I think that's which is why I always say, create an enabling environment as government. Don't give us money. The money will come. Because when you create an enabling environment as government, what you're saying to big corporate is that we can be trusted as government, because now we're actually doing our job. Mm. When they can be trusted as government because they're doing their job, the market opens up. Mm. Right? Because things are moving. Mm. Police is working. Mm. Labor is working. The courts are working. Things are moving. Why? Because that all forms part of an enabling environment, because you make it conducive for trade to happen. Mm. And I think that's the big thing. Not just to sit there and say, we need a billion as the Department of Small Business to disperse. That's not your job. Mm. You're focusing on the wrong thing. Mm. Take that entire money and focus it on building an enabling environment. Then you'll start to see things going amazingly well. You start to see that's puzzle shop that's making 300K do 900,000. Move from employing two or three individuals to employing maybe six individuals, right? Because the real big thing now, the big challenge as well that we have is the individuals don't want to expand because they're doing well.
Yeah.
Why must I bring on bigger headaches? Because I'm already doing well. And there's the other part of the conversation where, let's get them to formalize, but they're ones who are not interested in formalizing, they could. So they're happy in their taxes being collected through VAT, through income tax when they file, and other avenues as opposed to the traditional means, because I'm already doing well. I've got enough that's covering me, my family, and every single thing that I need. But you're going to take me out of that into formalization. And once I'm in, you're not going to support me. I'd rather stay where I already know that I've got a market that supports me.
I think I stopped you earlier on. You had mentioned all of these different provinces. Mlazi.
So no, definitely. I mean, I think for me, Mlazi has got a lot going on and bubbling up. I mean, I won't mention the traditional ones that we spoke about now. Danzani as well has a beautiful activity that is going on there as well. Mamelodi as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mamelodi as well. Mamelodi has got some serious business people. You know, Mamelodi was the first township I went to where we had a workshop. Then we're doing them small scale. We had a workshop where people came to the workshop in cars I never even knew people had in the township.
Mm.
And they were in the majority. People came there fully dressed in suits. Majority of the people that were there. And they were there to learn.
Mm.
And that for me signals a number of things, towards the attitude and the appetite.
Mm.
But Mamelodi has got some serious players, because there's some stuff that we're working on. And I can't really engage, but some guys are doing some amazing, amazing stuff there.
All right. So that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been a really great one, just talking about some of the activity that we're seeing in the township economy. And it was really great. One of the big things that we spoke about is the narratives driving South Africa's relationship with the township economy, and how a lot of mindsets that have been entrenched from way back when are still quite pervasive today, but at the same time, helping to move the needle a little bit, the efforts of, some of these players like the Township Entrepreneurs, Alliance, also talking quite a bit about the relationship of corporates and the formal financial services sector to the township and efforts to actually help that space. We interrogated what's going on with alternative lenders and some of the efforts that are on that front. Also talking quite a bit about, the mindset of your entrepreneurs and how do you help them to make the most of their businesses. And then, at the end, they're getting a sense of some of the activity, just how much money is flowing through. We had quite a number of statistics that we were quoting, the headline one being a 600 billion rand economy or 6% of GDP, and just interrogating each of the different industries and how they are contributing to the pie, and then ending off talking about which townships, you know, are firing from Bulelani's point of view. So that's been it. We were talking to Bulelani. He is the founder of the Township Entrepreneurs Alliance. Bulelani, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, and thank you to the listeners. Thank you so much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.